Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer. Darcy or Knightley? Elizabeth Bennet or Anne Elliott? If these names mean nothing to you, you aren't a member of the Jaynites, fans of the early 19th century novelist Jane Austen, who, in addition to just being awarded the honor by the Bank of England of having her picture on the £10 note, Jane Austen also has legions of fans who periodically get together, some in costume, to learn more about her life and times and debate the relative merits of her novels' heroes, heroines, and villains. Deborah Yaffe is herself a member of this club and has written a new book about their culture, Among the Jaynites, A Journey Through the World of Jane Austen Fandom. Welcome to WNYC, Deborah.
Thank you very much for having me.
First of all, your book is so fun because it's clear that you absolutely love Jane Austen and you embrace this culture of the Jaynites as your own, but you also are entertained by some aspects of it. So let me ask you first about when you discovered Jane Austen.
Well, I was 10, and I know this because when I got ready to write this book, I went and looked up my old diaries that I kept when I was a little girl. And so it was the summer that I was 10. We were on a family vacation. I was a very, very big reader at that age, and I took a ton of books along, and I finished them all like halfway through. So my father, also a big reader and an English professor, found Pride and Prejudice in the bookstore for me and gave it to me and said, you know, you might like this. And so I read that, and that was the beginning of the whole thing, and then I continued to read all of her books and reread them over the years and became a member of the Jane Austen Society of North America when I was a teenager, and the rest is history.
Tell me about going back to that 10-year-old girl's diary. What was her review of Pride and Prejudice?
You know, that was one of the more annoying things for me as a writer. Now I had no review. I never wrote anything really very substantive about anything that I thought or did or said, except for like the boys I had crushes on, which was really not very useful to me now. So it was really just like, I read this book, I finished it, now I'm reading this next one. So that was more or less what it was with Pride and Prejudice, but at least I could pinpoint the moment.
And so when did you discover that you were not alone in loving and appreciating Jane Austen?
You know, I think I joined the Jane Austen Society of North America. My parents actually bought me a membership when I was about 16, I think. And then the fall of my freshman year in college, I was going to college in Connecticut, and they had their annual conference in Philadelphia. So I went to that. And I do remember that was just like the most fun I had practically ever had in my life, just being surrounded by 200 other people who were equally into Jane Austen and just wanted to sit around and talk about her all weekend. So I think that was my first real experience of Jainite community, which is a really important theme in this book, that this is not just an enthusiasm we all share, but it's a community that we're all part of.
I didn't know the word Jainite dates back some time. It was actually coined in the 19th century.
Yes, it was, 1894, by a British literary critic called George Saintsbury. He was trying to kind of encapsulate something about Jane Austen fans, about their sense of a real personal connection with Jane Austen and with her books. And so he came up with this term, and it's kind of stuck, and especially because Rudyard Kipling used it as a title of a short story that he wrote after World War I, which is about a group of British soldiers in the trenches of World War I who sort of bond over their shared love for Jane Austen. And so between that story and the original use of the term, it's kind of become something that now we all wear as a badge of honor.
So you note there, all Jainites are not women. It's a
nope,
diverse,
not at all.
A diverse culture. Just describe for me what it was like walking into your first conference of Jainites. What does it look like when you show up?
Well, you know, it's really different now than it was back then because of something I'm sure we'll talk about, which is the mid-90s explosion of interest in Jane Austen. So back when I went to my first one, which is 1983, it was pretty staid. It was in a hotel. There were a couple of conference rooms and a couple of small sessions, and we all just kind of sat around and chatted, and then we had a big dinner, and then we had another lecture at the dinner, and then we all went home. Nowadays, it's probably tripled in size, and there are many more breakout sessions, and there are craft workshops, and there are dance lessons, and then the whole thing culminates with a big ball on the Saturday night of the conference. And a lot of people, not everybody, but many people attend the ball in Regency costume, some of them very, very beautiful and very, very elaborate, and do English country dancing of Jane Austen's period to period music played by various groups that are, you know, that know how to do that. And it's really a big, beautiful extravaganza. And there's also what I don't recall there being, at least to nearly as much volume when I went to my first one, which is there's a little shopping mall type area, the Emporium, where we all can stock up on our, you know, Jane Austen fridge magnets and tote bags, and also as well as all the latest books about her that have been written since the last conference.
There's so much in there that I want to go back to, but I first want to pinpoint the moment when Jainite culture changed in the mid-1990s. You write in your book that it has to do with Colin Firth.
Yes, the iconic moment is usually taken to be the moment in the BBC's 1995 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, in which Colin Firth, who's playing Mr. Darcy, the hero, he rides up on a hot day to this lake on his property, his vast estate, and it's hot, so he takes off his coat, jumps off his horse, jumps in the lake, comes out of the lake, and strides towards his house in this dripping, wet, kind of thin shirt, clinging fetchingly to his manly chest. And
that did it.
That apparently did it. Yeah. You know, actually, when I saw that dramatization, that moment did not especially strike me right at that moment, but apparently I was alone in that. So that dramatization, which is really wonderful for many reasons, not just that one moment, that happened and was very popular in both the UK and the United States. And then several other Jane Austen movies were released around the same time. And what I actually think was maybe even more important is that that's sort of right at the moment when the internet is taking off. And so if you were a kid like me who lived in a smallish community where you didn't have a lot of other people who were equally into Jane Austen, all of a sudden you could go on the internet and find dozens and dozens of people all over the world who were equally interested in Jane Austen. So it allows you to take that enthusiasm and make it into a basis for community rather than just for an individual kind of obsession.
And listeners, if you haven't seen it, we do have a link to that video of Colin Firth and that wet shirt on our show page. Go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show. The other thing you mentioned about the conferences today are the balls, and some people come in costume. And, and one of the things you chronicle in your book is your own search for a dress and for just the right undergarment to make it work.
That's one of my great sacrifices for research is that I actually appeared in public in this outfit. So I hope that I'll get a lot of credit for that and maybe a purple Jainite heart of some kind.
What was that like? I mean, does it feel putting on a period gown and being among Jane Austen fans, does it bring it alive for you in a way that it hadn't been before?
You know, it was sort of a mixed experience for me because as readers of this book will discover, I am really not into the whole dress-up thing. And really, I would never have done this in a million years if I wasn't writing a book about it. So I was not really into doing it to start with. And then as I discovered, I look really, really terrible in the fashions of the Regency. And if I had to wear them every day, like living in Jane Austen's time, I would never have found anyone to marry me. So I'm very lucky that our fashions have changed. So from that aspect, it was, you know, miserable and uncomfortable because I knew that I looked horrible. On the other hand, it is really magical to look down a line of dancers all dressed in these costumes and doing the dances of the period. It's really a kind of out of body and out of our time moment. So there is something kind of magical about that.
Why do you think Jane Austen? Why is she the one who struck? I mean, what about her books and novels cut across time? I mean, you quote Susan Lerner, the Jainite who founded Cisco Systems.
Sandy Lerner, excuse me.
And she ended up restoring the manor house where Jane Austen's brother lived and saying it was her feeling of complete self-confidence that made her a fan. Is that what's sort of universally acknowledged about Jane Austen?
Well, you know, the question why Jane Austen is typically the one that I try not to answer when people ask it of me, because I don't think that there is one clear answer. One of the things that I really felt as I researched this book was that there's a huge diversity of responses to Jane Austen. And that's one of the things that I really loved most about meeting all these different Jainites is they're all reading the same books, and yet they're finding very different things in them. There's people who think she's a feminist. There's people who think she's a conservative. There's people who think she's anti-slavery. There's people who think that she's completely complacent about that. So there's just a huge range of views on her. And so I wouldn't say there's one thing about Jane Austen that makes her hit. I do think that she's a writer who doesn't tell you what to think. So if you read some 19th century authors, they'll have long passages where they explain to you what this story is about and why it's important. And Jane Austen never does that. So she's got that sort of open-ended quality where you can find different things in her because there's not going to be anything on the page that necessarily tells you, don't think of it this way, do think of it that way.
And in your book, you show how Janeites have very different readings on her mm-hmm. book. So one of the people you profile in your book is Arnie from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and he's actually on the line. Arnie, in just a few seconds, tell what do you think about the book, and what's your read on Jane Austen? Why do you think she resonates? Are you there, Arnie?
Hi. Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, there you are. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, hi, Deborah.
Hi, Arnie. How are you?
Good. I first want to say that I've only read part of the book so far. Deborah has sent me a copy, but I haven't received it yet, but I've been browsing a little bit as I could in the excerpts that have been put out on the net, and I think Deborah genuinely has done a fabulous job as a journalist.
Tell me what you think of Jane Austen.
Well, I am a true Jane Austen obsessive. My wife, whom I married 19 years ago, introduced me to Jane Austen then, and as I am fond of saying, and she will roll her eyes, and Deborah describes this in my profile in the book, she is just amazing. She has changed my life and created a monster. And I think that I totally agree with what Deborah just said about you can find many different points of view supported in Jane Austen's text. And I would say that this is intentional on Jane Austen's part. She deliberately wrote in a kind of a very sophisticated, ambiguous manner. Why? Because I think she wanted to provoke her readers into thinking. She didn't want to tell you what's going on in life, what's going on in her stories. She was trying to get you to figure it out for yourself. So it's kind of like a lesson in life, but a very real life version of it. So that part of the reason there are so many Janeites who are so passionate is because these characters are real to us. Mm. Why are they real to us? Because Jane Austen made them sufficiently ambiguous that we could sort of find ourselves in them or find other people we knew in them. And they're timeless. She was an amazing psychologist.
All right. Thank you so much, Arnie. So Deborah, does that happen when Janeites get together? A lot of vigorous debates about what Jane Austen was really after?
Oh, yes. I mean, you can get people online arguing for hours about, you know, whether Elizabeth Bennet was subconsciously attracted to Mr. Darcy even while claiming that she disliked him, or, you know, whether Fanny Price is or is not a secret manipulator despite appearing to be this passive, timid little mouse in Mansfield Park. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we could talk about for hours.
And I want to ask you before we go about the Twitter controversy that got stirred mm-hmm. up when it was announced that Jane Austen would appear on the 10-pound note. It got some very vicious Twitter attacks. Did you follow that?
Yeah, I know that the woman who campaigned in England to have a woman placed on a piece of British currency got some horrible rape and death threats through Twitter after it was announced that her campaign had succeeded. I actually think that has less to do with Jane Austen than with a bunch of Neanderthal males who think that uppity women need to be sent right back to the kitchen. So I kind of think that no matter who had been put on the note, assuming that it was female, they would probably have reacted that way. But it is a very kind of un-Jane Austen-y way to respond to somebody that you disagree with, that's for sure.
And we have just a few weeks left in summer, but if someone has not read a Jane Austen novel before, where should they start for their summer reading?
Well, you know, it's always good to start with Pride and Prejudice because it's such a funny, funny book. And, you know, the thing that people maybe don't always know about Jane Austen if they haven't read her is that she's hilarious. And her books do not feel like homework, even though a lot of people were introduced to them in high school. They really are just the most entertaining books in the world.
And I want to tell you, we had some Facebook followers offer new endings for that most famous sentence that starts Pride and Prejudice. The line is, it is a truth universally acknowledged that a simple man in possession a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. Molly suggested, if a truth is universally acknowledged that a single person in possession of a New York apartment must be in want of a roommate. And Rachel added, a single person in possession of a freelancer in possession of an inconstant fortune must be in want of an unpaid internship. So people offering some variations there on Jane Austen. Deborah Yaffe, thank you so much for your book, Among the Janeites, A Journey Through the World of Jane Austen Fandom. I know I'm going to be picking up Pride and Prejudice and taking a look at it again.
Excellent.
Thanks
then my
so
work
much
is
for
done.
Coming into WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
And Deborah will be reading at the Princeton Public Library on September 12th at 7 p.m. You can also read an excerpt on our website. Go to WNYC.org. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. After the break, your reactions on A-Rod. Get the calls coming in, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr.